き。
Hello, friends. It is Friday, January 11th, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Dr. Kate Ray. Oh, I'm going to get this wrong. Let me try it. Rayom Blue? How's that? The author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. And this came out in 2012. Her websites are drkatend.com and drkatend.com/blog and naturalfactors.com. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna.
Well, I just really enjoy, I've enjoyed looking through your book and recognizing some facts that I had kind of figured out before, and see that you are associated or endorse the, let's see, what do you endorse? Well, you don't endorse factory farming, that's for sure.
That's right, yeah. More like old-fashioned ways of farming and eating and getting back to the way we used to do things before our food system became so industrialized.
Exactly, and that is a really big factor in what has happened to our health. You endorse Weston A. Price. All of a sudden, my mind just went blank, and of course, a lot of my listeners, our listeners, know about his research and the things that he said, and we've had a lot of people on the program who have who know about that foundation and about the work that he did, and. Your work is quite important also, but I think, as you said in the title of your book, Little Known Vitamin K2, and we rarely hear about it.
That's right. It's really something that has been overlooked for so long, you know, for a few reasons, partially because of a case of mistaken identity, and partially because of Price's work. I mean, he actually did, ultimately, he really studied this nutrient, but he talked about it and published it under the name Activator X. And so he had an amazing research on this nutrient, and yet it went sort of right under our noses for decades without really understanding what it was because of that. And it's only just recently that we've been able to make a connection between his work as well as, you know, the change in our food production, that we know it's affected our health in a lot of ways, but really robbing us of this one particular vitamin. And because we weren't really aware of this vitamin, we didn't know that we were missing out on it. And so, you know, this isn't just a you know, small, like, you know, the vitamin of the day that's going to come and go. This is actually a major nutrient that works with vitamin D that we've been missing out on.
Right. And a lot of us take vitamin D and without even recognizing the K2. And so is that harming us or not? Are we not getting the benefit of the vitamin D?
Well, both. So vitamin D and K2 definitely work together. And
Dr. Kate, we do have to take a real quick break. We will be right back in 3 minutes, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and my guest today is Dr. Kate Rayom Blue, the author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. It is available at Amazon, also as a Kindle book, and you don't have to have a Kindle device to read it. You can download that program on your regular PC. Dr. Kate is a licensed naturopathic physician and a former faculty member at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She speaks across the country on topics related to natural medicine, as well as being a contributing editor to several health-related publications. So we're very happy to have you on the program.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here to help spread the word about vitamin K2.
Great. Well, we were talking a little bit about diet, and a lot of the listeners understand the difference or the ramifications of having their beef fed via grain in these factory farms, which you address in your book.
Yes, definitely. We know there's lots of ways in which this has affected our health and that really the quality of the food that we're getting in. There's less omega-3 essential fatty acids, reduced number of lots of vitamins and minerals. But the one that was really overlooked for so long is exactly this vitamin K2. And it turns out that when animals are out on the pasture, and this includes both, you know, cattle if you're looking at beef or pigs, chickens, when they're out on the pasture eating green grass, that increases the amount of vitamin K2 in things like egg yolks and butter and dairy products and the fat, because this is a fat-soluble vitamin. And when animals are grain-fed, well, that the amount of vitamin K2 reduces dramatically, and in some cases there's none at all.
Wow, and of course we are what we eat, and it's better to get these things naturally, of course. But if we can't, then we should be able to have a vitamin, a supplement that we can take that would give us what we don't get from our food, and we certainly do not get all the nutrition from our food that we should.
That's right. So we even know, you know, when it comes to grass-fed food, even if you're trying hard to eat grass-fed food, there's always a cyclical variation. You know, throughout the year, there are going to be times when, you know, in the wintertime, it's hard to get as much of those nutrients as you can in the summer. And for many people, they have trouble getting access to grass-fed food. So there are certain fermented foods. Some of them are a little bit strange and unusual and definitely an acquired taste. And those can provide a source of vitamin K2 year-round, and if you don't care for those or have trouble finding those, and I do have a list of them in my book, as well as you can find that list on Wikipedia under if you search vitamin K, then there are supplements. And there's a few things to know when looking for supplements, and maybe that's something that we should get into for people who want to make sure that they have enough vitamin K every day.
Okay, yes. Absolutely. And I know there are websites that tell you exactly what foods have vitamin K in them. Foodinfo.us is one site.
That's okay. Right. Wikipedia was recently updated to differentiate between the foods that have vitamin K1 and K2. And that's probably something that's important for listeners to understand, because that's one of the reasons why vitamin K2 was overlooked for so long, is because it was confused with its sort of sister vitamin, which is vitamin K1. Now, K1 is easily found in green leafy vegetables, and you know, even if you eat those once every 6 months, you'll get plenty of vitamin K1 in your diet, and that nutrient, its only role is in blood clotting. And for a long time, scientists assumed that vitamin K2 was just another blood clotting vitamin, and in fact, that's not the case. Vitamin K2 doesn't participate in blood clotting, won't affect your blood clotting, and its role is in making sure that calcium gets into the right places in the body.
Oh, okay. So it's important to differentiate between the two.
Very important, because for a long time they were confused or assumed to be the same nutrient, and in fact they have very different actions in the body, very different food sources, and while it's just about impossible to become deficient in vitamin K1, deficiency of vitamin K2 is very common because we do need to have it in our diets every day.
Oh, now you mentioned that we can add cultured foods to our diet. Now, would this be... give us some examples.
Well, yes, there are certain cultured or fermented foods that are high in vitamin K2. Not all of them, because it really depends on the bacteria. So, you know, some fermented foods are made with particular types of bacteria that produce vitamin K2 and others aren't. So there are a few cheeses. This is very good news for your heart health. A couple of cheeses, Gouda and Brie cheese, are very high in vitamin K2. And these are, it doesn't matter if it was a grass-fed, you know, the milk that went into the cheese doesn't have to be grass-fed. It's the bacteria that makes the cheese that will make vitamin K2. And so that's very good news because these are tasty and easy to find. And the fact that Brie cheese, in addition to egg yolks and cream and butter, are so high in vitamin K2 really helps explain, for example, the French paradox, where, you know, people in France would have these very rich diets and yet be quite heart healthy. And we didn't know why for a long time. We said it was the red wine, which, yeah, definitely will help, but it won't clear out your arteries the way vitamin K2 does. So Brie is very high, and Gouda. So these are two cheeses. Cheddar, as an example, has a little bit of vitamin K2. Yogurt, kefir, other types of dairy products don't have very much. So it really depends on, you know, the individual bacteria that are making the food.
Okay. Well, Brie is my favorite cheese. I buy it all the time.
Well, that's good. That's great for your bones and your heart and diabetes, cancer protection. When we talk about what's a heart-healthy snack, it's often, should we have some hummus and vegetables or crackers and dip, some sort of low-fat dip? No. Brie cheese and a glass of red wine, Deanna, is probably the most heart-healthy snack that you can think of.
Oh, okay. What about some of the cultured vegetables, like sauerkraut?
That's a good question. It's one I get a lot. So the most cultured vegetables aren't especially high in vitamin K2. Sauerkraut, kimchi, they have a little bit, but not much. There is one cultured vegetable food that is unusual, at least here in North America. It's called natto, N-A-T-T-O, and that is a fermented soybean food that is common in Japan. I don't usually promote soy foods, but fermented ones are fine. They don't have the same problems associated with them as the unfermented soy. So natto is a type of kind of sticky, slimy soybean breakfast food, fermented, that you'll find in some areas of Japan, and it happens to be the number one highest food in vitamin K2. And for people who eat this in Asia, they have much lower hip fracture risk, they're much heart healthier. It really makes a difference for health.
It doesn't sound very appetizing.
It is an acquired taste, to say the least, and it's one that I still haven't acquired, even though I've tried very hard. But I have had people report to me that, you know, once they have it a few times, they actually learn to like it. So it's not that easy to find. If you live near a good Asian or particularly a Japanese or Korean grocery store, you might be able to find it there or get it in or order it through a Japanese restaurant or a Korean restaurant. But it took me a long – I'm still working on trying to learn to like it, because it really is very good for you.
Okay. I know one of our listeners has mentioned it to me, and I'd never heard of it. And but the word slimy doesn't appeal to me.
No, it doesn't, though. I do include a recipe in the book for what ended up being my favorite, I guess you could say, way. It's if you have it with lots of spices, and ginger and pungent things, that does help. But the texture is a little bit on the slippery side.
I see. Okay, on page 69 to 74, you talk about that. Yes.
Adventures in natto. Yes, trying to find it, trying to eat it, and it is really good for you. And there are lots of people who swear that once they have it enough, that they do learn to like it. So it might be worth trying.
Right. Well, the first time that I had tasted kimchi, I thought, this is so awful. And then I made some. And, I really kind of liked it, and it kind of grew on me, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, kimchi, I find it delicious now. It's quite different from the natto, but even, you know, blue cheese, when you think about it, it's kind of gross, but you can definitely develop a taste for that and learn to love it. So I don't see why natto couldn't be the same.
Except you do say that it smells like old gym socks, and it's held together by globs of stringy mucus.
Yes. That's all true.
Okay. Hey, we'll just have to give it a try.
Exactly. It really is worth it. And I did try to eat it during my pregnancy. Maybe that's part of the problem where I had a hard time stomaching it. But it is very important, vitamin K2, during pregnancy as well. The studies show people who eat it definitely reap the benefits.
Okay. Well, then we'll just have to give it a whirl. And particularly if it's going to help us and all of the things that vitamin K2 seems to address would make it sufficiently worthwhile to try whatever foods that particular vitamin is in.
It does, and maybe after the break we can get into the other benefits of vitamin K2 in addition to bone health and heart health.
Exactly. All righty. We are coming up on a break, and yes, we'll have to go over some of these foods because it's like this list that we find. There are a lot of foods with vitamin K in it, but even some of the things on this list, it doesn't really indicate whether those things have to be grass-fed. So that's something important to think about. All righty, we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Rayon Blue, the author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. The websites are drkatend.com and drkatend.com/blog. Now, if you go to the blog, you can sign up for the newsletter. And that's on the right-hand side. And you can get a newsletter there. And you can also see the contents of her book. Before we go on to the other subjects, other topics that we were going to talk about, could you talk just briefly about the calcium paradox and what are the dangers? You talk about calcium excess in your book.
Definitely. This is very important because so many people are taking calcium supplements now. And, you know, for doctors that, you know, doctors that wouldn't even recommend a multivitamin will tell their patients to take calcium and usually vitamin D, which is good. It's certainly better to have it with vitamin D. But lots of studies come out in recent years and even more since I've published the book saying that people who take calcium supplements have 20 to 30% more heart attacks and strokes than those who don't. So it's absolutely possible that calcium can build up in the wrong places in our body, for example, lining our arteries, leading to hardening of the arteries. So this is the calcium paradox because, you know, we need calcium in our bodies, but it has to be in the right places. It has to be in our bones and our teeth. And if instead it ends up in our arteries or other areas, other soft tissues, then it can be deadly. And it turns out that the body does have a way of dealing very effectively with calcium and keeping it in its place, but that it needs vitamin K2 to do that. So that is a major role of vitamin K2. It will direct calcium where it needs to go. So it will shuttle calcium into your bones and teeth where you want it, and it not only prevents the deposition of calcium, but it has been even shown to remove calcium plaque buildup in arteries. So this, you know, to say that vitamin K2 is a vitamin that could save your life is literally true, because it's very important for calcium metabolism. And this is important even for people who don't take calcium supplements. We have to remember that heart attacks and strokes or heart disease is the leading killer, the number one killer of both men and women, whether or not they take calcium supplements. So vitamin K2 could literally be a lifesaver.
So, and factory farming, since most people do not eat meat that has the K2 in it, then they're going to have to get it elsewhere. And so where are some of the places that we can get it besides the brie cheese and the gouda cheese and grass-fed beef? And you said people don't ordinarily have access to grass-fed beef unless you go to a specialty store or have a local farmer that can sell it to you.
That's right. It really does take quite a bit of effort to find those foods. And it certainly is worth making the effort because they, you know, they taste better and they're better for our health in lots of ways. But if you don't have access to those on a consistent basis, you can't risk missing out on vitamin K2. So we have these certain fermented foods, you know, that I mentioned before, the butter, the gouda, and the natto, if you can learn to like it. But if you can't find those or have a hard time eating them, for whatever reason, then that's when you want to start looking at supplements. There are a few food-based supplements that you can get online or possibly at a local health food store, like a grass-fed butter oil or a grass-fed butter ghee. This is like a clarified type of butter that you can use in cooking or spread it on your bread, however you would use butter. And this is made from exclusively grass-fed butter, so it'll be higher in vitamin K2. Or you could also look for supplements, and these would be soft gel, because this is a fat-soluble vitamin. You're looking typically at a soft gel. Occasionally you'll find it in a liquid, and you can take this along with your food.
Okay. Now, what about something like coconut oil? Is vitamin K2 found in that?
No, even though coconut oil is a delicious and very healthy fat, it doesn't have any vitamin K2 in it.
Okay. Other than those, so supplements. It looks like most of us are probably looking at supplements.
Given the fact that studies have shown that most people aren't getting enough vitamin K2 and they are lacking in vitamin K2, they have a deficiency. It could be mild or moderate, even severe deficiency. Then a supplement is usually a good idea as a backup or insurance to make sure you're getting enough vitamin K2 every day to keep calcium in its place. It's also been shown to help with cell growth regulation, so really important for cancer protection, for diabetes, for insulin sensitivity, for children to prevent and help manage cavities and dental health, as well as while their bones are growing. Very important during adolescence when the skeleton is growing. There are lots of reasons to make sure you're getting vitamin K2 every day, and if you can't get it through food, then you do want to make sure you're getting it through a supplement.
All right. Now, you say in your book that a deficiency is usually not recognizable or kind of invisible.
Yes, that's right. Certainly, studies have shown that the majority of apparently healthy adults are lacking in vitamin K2 or deficient. And you could think, well, if you can be apparently healthy and not have enough of this, then what does it matter? And that's because K2 deficiency underlies a lot of this silent killer concerns.
All righty. We are going to a quick break. We will be right back with our guest today after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. Kate Rayum-Blue. And she's the author of Vitamin K2 and The Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. Her websites are drkatend.com and drkatend.com/blog. You can also see some interesting things at naturalfactors.com. And in your book, it also says that another source of grass-fed protein is wild game, and that people who are fortunate enough to have access to it actually are, you know, that's a good thing. But they tend to be a little bit thinner, more slender, lean, and so it's really the fat that is necessary to provide the vitamins.
That's right. The fat's where it's at when it comes to vitamin K2 because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. So wild game is wonderful because, of course, it's naturally grass-fed or fed on typically green foods. But they tend to be lower in fat as well, leaner animals. So you want to not waste or discard the fat. And the organs of these animals, the liver especially, is often where a lot of vitamin K2 is found.
Oh, okay. All righty. And you talk about the eggs in your book.
Yes, eggs is something that is often much easier to come by grass-fed because you don't need as much space to have pastured eggs, so eggs that are from hens that are out on the pasture, out in a grassy field. And these eggs are definitely tastier. A lot of people get them just for that reason. And anybody who's ever had an egg like this will know that the whites are sort of more consistent than typical ones you would buy in the grocery store. And the yolks are usually much darker, dark yellow or orange. And that is a sign of an egg with a lot of vitamin K2 in it. So this is really a very heart-healthy egg.
Oh, great. That's the kind that I eat. And they are wonderful. I just couldn't go back to those other kinds of eggs. They just don't even look good.
No, they don't. And it's a big, we ran out of our regular grass-fed eggs and pastured eggs when we were on vacation this year. And so I thought, oh, how bad could it be? I'll pick up some from the local store. And wow, there's just no flavor in the regular factory farmed egg.
Yeah, they're terrible. Just, they're awful. And, of course, all my eggs they're different sizes and they're brown, but they're very orange and, I love them. Just absolutely love them. Now, one of the reasons that they went to factory farming is because they felt like the land, all of these cows took up too much of the land and out there in the fields. And so it was much cheaper to just keep them in a smaller space and feed them grain. And really, they're not even designed to eat grain, to process grain, which is terrible for the animal itself.
It is. I mean, this sets off a chain reaction. First of all, we still need land to grow the grain to feed the cattle rather than just putting the cattle directly out onto the land where they would actually improve the health of the land instead
exactly.
of through monocropping that deteriorates the health of the soil. And yes, you're right. These animals are not designed to be eating grain. And ultimately, you know, when we look at everybody likes a nice marbled steak once in a while, but in fact, this comes from eating grain. These animals essentially have developed diabetes, but we slaughter them before they would die of that naturally. This is not, you know, they're not healthy animals because they're not designed to be eating grain like this. And they are then prone to all kinds of illnesses. You have to give them antibiotics, and it's just not the way nature intended.
Yeah, that even sounds distasteful.
Yeah, when you think about it like that, it is kind of distasteful. And it's healthier, to get back to the old-fashioned ways of doing it. It does require some adjustment in learning how to cook your meat if it's leaner and different ways of cooking grass-fed meat. But it really is healthier in so many ways. And vitamin K2 is one way that grass-fed meat is healthier that has been overlooked.
Right. And as you say, it takes a lot of land, probably the same or even more land, to grow the grains to feed the animals. So it just doesn't make sense to do this, except for the people who are looking for a lot of profit and really do not have any concerns whatsoever about the health of the nation.
Yes, that's right. And we really can't go on like this for much longer because, of course, all that farming is based on fossil fuels. That's yet another problem associated with it. You know, to grow that grain and then ship the grain and to feed the animals, it's just not sustainable in a long run. So there's several problems with it, and vitamin K2, a lack of that, is one of those.
Right. And that is if you buy into the fossil fuel theory, which a lot of people do. But let's talk about, and you already mentioned it, the plaque accumulation and what that incurs for us in the way, you know, heart disease and whatever, and all the other things. And the osteoporosis, as women get older, they seem to be vulnerable for that. And it's all diet related, right?
Yes, that's right. And you know what? These things have become so prevalent that we've almost lost sight of the fact that they are, in fact, diet-related, and we start to accept them as, you know, just a part of aging. And that's really not the case. And our body is designed to heal and stay healthy as long as it has the right nutrients. And certainly, Weston Price showed that in his work. You know, he traveled around the world and found people who didn't have toothbrushes or floss or dentists, and they had perfectly healthy teeth throughout their whole lives, and they weren't prone to cancer and diabetes and osteoporosis and heart disease, and that's because their diets provided them with all of the nutrients that they needed to stay healthy. And Price ultimately ended up focusing a great deal on the fat-soluble vitamins, so vitamins A and D, as well as the third one that he called Activator X, and that's the one that ultimately became associated or called vitamin K2.
Right, and you also, well, you mentioned teeth. The native peoples that he studied did not have crooked teeth. Not only did they not have cavities, they weren't crooked. And we've come to expect in this country, well, if you have crooked teeth, then you have to have braces and you have to, you know, do other things. And don't even think about it as being related to our diet at all.
That's right. We either think, well, it's just part of being a teenager, you end up with braces, or there's some idea that it's genetic. You inherit your crooked teeth. And yet Price showed that, you know, there were parents with absolutely perfect straight teeth as all their ancestors had. And he did show this by studying the skulls of, you know, many generations of deceased, all had perfect, beautiful teeth with no cavities. And then when they adopted modern diet with processed foods that were lacking in these nutrients, lo and behold, their children would be born with crooked teeth. And I do have pictures of that in the book. And once you see that, it makes a lot of sense that this really isn't a matter of genetics. It is a matter of nutrition. And you can absolutely avoid painful and expensive orthodontic work by having the right type of nutrition during pregnancy and during childhood.
Right. Well, I think you can avoid even going to the doctor if you have sufficient vitamins and supplements and eat the proper food. You can probably go your entire life without ever seeing a doctor.
Absolutely. Certainly lots of people have done that for a very long time, and Price discovered those people and around the world when he was traveling.
Right. Now, you have a list here on page 66 and 67 of the things that vitamin K2 is in. And, let's see. Yes, you have it by micrograms, chicken liver, and you say raw.
Well, the testing was done on raw liver, and then they retested it sautéed, and it shows that cooking will, or pan frying in this case, reduce the content of the vitamin K somewhat, but you know, you can see that it doesn't completely eliminate it. So there's a little bit of an effect with cooking, but it's still, some of it's retained for sure.
Right. And I see sauerkraut is here. Actually, sauerkraut has more than whole milk.
That's right. And that also reflects the fact that typically, you know, your regular store-bought whole milk is from grain-fed animals.
Ah.
But yeah, sauerkraut does have a little bit. You'd have to eat quite a bit of sauerkraut, a big bucket of sauerkraut,
oh,
to be able to say meet your daily optimal requirement for vitamin K2, but it does have a little bit in there, and that speaks to the fact that most fermented foods have some.
Right.
And I would guess that kimchi is around the same as sauerkraut.
Right. And I think that I would never buy it at the store. The sauerkraut that you buy at the store is processed, and it is not really cultured. It's just process, so it's,
yeah,
totally
you can make your own sauerkraut very nicely. It's very, very good for you.
Yes, I make it all the time. You talk about on page 117, you talk about vitamin K for healthy veins.
Oh,
and this
yes.
is important. This isn't just about vanity and about varicose veins and not being able to wear shorts or a bathing suit or whatever. This is about your health, and inasmuch as your blood runs through your veins, you need to have healthy veins. So talk to us about veins, vein health.
That's right. You know, the varicose veins that we may see on the surface, well, they are only superficial, but they may reflect the health of your veins deeper inside in areas where you can't see. And it's just as important, arguably, as the health of your arteries. We do focus a lot on the health of our arteries, but both the arteries and veins are affected by vitamin K2 or a lack of vitamin K2. And I've certainly had people report remarkable results with their varicose veins. You know, from an aesthetic point of view, it's nice that a unappealing or ugly-looking vein has disappeared, but it speaks to the fact that it has improved vein and artery health inside. So I'm happy if people want to take vitamin K2 for reasons like varicose veins or wrinkles that may seem superficial, when I know that it's helping their bone health, their heart health, the health of their arteries and veins, and so much more on the inside.
Exactly. And if you were to go to a doctor to treat varicose veins, chances are they would want to, I'm not sure,
remove
pull them out.
Them surgically, yeah. Sometimes sclerotherapy, so they'll inject them with salt water so they shrink up, or remove them surgically. Those are all ultimately Band-Aid solutions. Well, I would say surgical removal is maybe the not even considered Band-Aid solution, because it's possibly doing more harm than good. Just pulling the vein out, again, doesn't change what may be happening in the health of the veins where you can't see them. So this is really an important nutrient to improve the health of your veins.
Right. And, right, as you say, what you see on the outside can be much, much worse on the inside. So where would a person find vitamin K2? Oh, you also talk about it for diabetes.
Yes, vitamin K2 has been shown to be very important for improving insulin sensitivity, so helping your body respond to its own insulin, which is a key concern with type 2 diabetes. And we know that people with diabetes are more prone to osteoporosis, and I think that's not just a coincidence, and also more prone to heart disease. All of these concerns have vitamin K2 in common, or a lack of vitamin K2 in common. And so you can actually do a lot of good for many different health concerns with this one nutrient, and diabetes is one of those.
All right. Now, you mentioned juvenile onset diabetes, and I do have a friend whose daughter has that type of diabetes. And, I mean, she's 16, and she has to give herself insulin shots every day. And usually, or I've known of people who had early onset diabetes, and by the time they're 30, this one gentleman that I knew was blind. He was very ill. He died very early, probably in his 40s. And all of this could be avoided.
And that is just about entirely due to mismanagement of the diabetes. So we know that type 1 diabetes or juvenile diabetes can't be cured per se. In other words, the pancreas won't ever produce insulin again, but the diabetes can be managed properly in such a way that we're not taking more insulin than we need. We're encouraging the body to use the injected insulin efficiently and appropriately, and there's no reason that you need to die early with all of the complications of diabetes, and no reason that you can't live a long, healthy life. And I know individuals with type 1 diabetes that are now in their 60s and extremely healthy because they treat their diabetes appropriately. And certainly vitamin K2 is one important nutrient to help do that.
Right. You talk about cancer in your book. Well, you talk about neurologic health and you refer to Alzheimer's. That vitamin K2 might be a preventative, because it would prevent those chronic disorders of the brain, like stroke and some of those other conditions.
That's right. Vitamin K2 has been shown to have importance or roles and places in the brain that we don't fully understand yet. This is an area that definitely stands to have a lot of research. We have a good understanding of how vitamin K2 works in the rest of the body, but there are certainly roles and vitamin K2-dependent proteins and things that it does in the brain that we don't understand well. One of the things that we know it does, it acts as not quite an antioxidant, but more like an oxidant preventative. So it prevents areas of the brain from becoming oxidized, and so that is very important for keeping brain cells healthy as we age. So having enough vitamin K2 can help keep our brain cells in optimum health.
All righty. Well, there's so many people that have Alzheimer's, or that just have trouble remembering things, have short-term memory and such. Would this also apply to children who perhaps are what they call hyperactive or just have issues, even autistic children? Would this be...
Well, we know that vitamin K2 is helpful for many aspects of children's health, and while those are conditions that we don't necessarily understand that well yet, or the etiology or what causes them, vitamin K2 certainly wouldn't hurt. There's no toxicity associated with it, and it's a good thing for general health for kids.
Okay. All righty. Cancer prevention.
There's vitamin so much K2. Research on that. That might be a good thing to talk about after the break, because that was an astonishing amount of research on vitamin K2 and cancer.
Okay, we'll do that in the second hour. We are going to a break, and we'll be back, right back in 3 minutes with our guest today. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Kate Rayon-Blue. She is the author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. Why don't we talk about infertility for a couple of minutes? I think that's something that I know a lot of people who would like to have children, but it just doesn't happen.
It's a huge problem now, and there are certainly a lot of factors that play into that, and vitamin K2 is one of them. We know that vitamin K2 helps to increase sperm count and motility, so this is definitely very important for male fertility, and we can measure that directly. There are certain vitamin K2-dependent proteins that directly affect sperm production as well as testosterone levels that also affect sperm production. So this is very important. And historically, Price's work showed a lot of cultures would use special foods, during the preconception or pre-marriage period to help promote better fertility. And this is definitely one that I include for anybody who is trying to conceive or trying to start a family, because it is also so important during pregnancy. So in the first trimester, it helps with the development of the baby's primary teeth. In the second trimester, the adult teeth and the facial form as it's developing. In the third trimester, it continues to be important, as well as throughout breastfeeding and childhood. So this really is one. If one thing comes out of the book, I hope that if people understand vitamin K2 is as important as folic acid for pregnant women.
Okay. Oh, my. This is very, very interesting. Who knew? I went to Amazon because they do carry a lot of, well, they carry everything you could think of besides books. And there's a lot of brands of vitamin K2. Now, is there any one that you particularly recommend?
Well, what you want to look for when you're looking for a vitamin K2 product, and I do get into this in more depth in the book, is for something called MK7. That stands for menaquinone 7. And I recommend that because it's convenient. You can just take this once a day, and it stays in the body for a long time. It's a naturally derived form from bacterial synthesis, actually extracted from natto, that Japanese food we were talking about
okay.
before. And so that makes it, it's one I prefer. So as long as it has that in it, typically then it's just sort of comparison shopping for price.
Okay. Now, there is a brand called MK7. It's put out by Gero Formulas. Is that something that...
Yeah, Gero is one company that makes a brand of MK7. There are a number of them on the market. That's certainly not the only one. And Natural Factors has one. I believe Mercola has one. And there are probably a few that you can find on Amazon that you'll see up there if you're looking for them online.
Right. And now also makes a K2 vitamin.
And as long, I don't know off the top of my head if that's an MK7 product. The other type of vitamin K2 you'll find on the market will be labeled as MK4. There has been a lot of research done on MK4, that's for sure. But it is a synthetic form, and you need a higher dose, and you typically need to take it more often.
Okay. All righty, we're going to our 60-second top of the hour break. We will be right back after a station ID. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and this is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is Dr. Kate Rayon Blue, the author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. The websites are Dr. Kate, K-A-T-E-N-D, a naturopathic doctor, nd.com, and then just add a slash to that and blog to go to her blog where you can sign up to be on her mailing list. We do have a question from the chat room. Does she know if vitamin K2 aids in magnesium uptake and calcium inhibits magnesium, and those who take calcium supplements become magnesium deficient? Is that true?
Yes. So this is a very good point, because certainly a shortcoming of the many studies done that show calcium supplements increase heart disease or heart attack and stroke, they didn't take into account magnesium levels. And we know that magnesium deficiency is common, and that if you're deficient in magnesium and you're taking a calcium supplement, that'll make the situation worse. So we definitely want to focus more on our magnesium intake, because it can be more challenging to get than calcium. And if you're taking a calcium supplement, you need to have some magnesium with it. So vitamin K2 doesn't directly interact with magnesium, but they have a lot of complementary actions. So we know magnesium lowers blood pressure, for example, which is really important for your heart health, and vitamin K2 helps keep the arteries clear. So these work together. K2 and magnesium are both important for diabetes. For many conditions, K2 and magnesium have a complementary action.
Okay. Another question. And we've already talked about this, but would it help an autistic child who just doesn't seem to, their connectors in their brain just don't always make the right connections?
Right.
And they make judgments that are not wise.
Right.
They are impulsive. Would that help a child to experience impulsivity?
We know that that autism is very complex, and that a lot of the disruptions we see in brain function do originate in the gut and gastrointestinal tract, and chemicals that are being produced there that affect the way the brain thinks. Now, this is one area where K2 really hasn't been tested. So because K2 has no toxicity and it's good for dental health and children's health in general, I do recommend that kids take it. I can't say for sure its effect for autistic children, because that's one area where we haven't done a lot of research, but it's certainly very safe, wouldn't hurt them, and it would be great to get feedback on that.
Okay, but basically the autism and the symptoms really originate in the gut?
Typically, it's a very, very common case would be a disruption in the gut flora that happened at a particular age, and that caused the production of chemicals that ultimately affect the brain or continue to affect the brain. Sometimes those changes are permanent. Sometimes they can be improved to a certain extent, but there really is a very important gut-brain connection there.
Okay. Does this happen when infants receive vaccines?
Not that there is a factor. The very typical case that you'd see is an infant around a year to a year and a half has some sort of an infection and gets a few doses of antibiotics, one or more doses of antibiotics, at the same time or around the time they're due for their vaccines. And that's an especially problematic combination, because then you've wiped out the healthy gut flora before you inject them with whatever happens to be in the vaccine. And that is a big, big problem. Now, every patient that I've seen in my practice, they had that same history, antibiotics, then the vaccine, and then problems.
Okay. We are going to a break. We will take some phone calls after the break at 800-313-944. Wait, what is it? 313. Oh, my goodness. I'm reading your book and trying to talk at the same time. All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And we will take your calls at 800-313-9443. So does K2 help you to multitask? Can it help you read a book, answer questions in the chat room, and order vitamins at Amazon all at the same time?
What do you think, Deanna?
goodness. All right, let's talk about cancer. You've talked about all kinds of cancer in your book, prostate cancer, all kinds of various cancers.
That was probably the largest body of evidence. What surprised me when I started researching vitamin K2 for a nutrient that, you know, almost nobody had heard of and very little was being talked about and had been so overlooked, there was quite a bit of research done on it. And cancer was a big area. So we know that based on population-based studies, individuals who have more vitamin K2 in their diet in the big European studies have much lower levels of prostate and lung cancer. So these are the two big cancer killers of men. And vitamin K2 has been shown to be helpful with those types of cancers on a number of levels. There was leukemia, lots of research but using vitamin K2 preventative and treatments in addition to standard treatments, breast cancer, stomach cancer, just about any type of cancer, liver cancer, very, very important. So for individuals who have hepatitis, we know that they are ultimately prone to developing liver cancer, and having lots of vitamin K2 has been shown to delay and slow the development of liver cancer. So very important for anybody with hepatitis. Lots of cancer research here.
Yes, and of course, breast cancer is so prevalent now. And in fact, I talked yesterday to the doctor that we had on yesterday about breast cancer It is very prevalent, and so you're saying that K2 can be very useful for preventing it, and that's what we want to do is prevent stuff.
Exactly. So we know that K2 activates certain proteins that will take calcium and guide it into your bones where you want the calcium to be. We also know it activates other proteins that will go and scavenge and remove calcium from areas we don't want it to be, like our arteries. But it activates a third group of proteins that do control cell growth and regulate cell growth. So that's why it's so important in cancer prevention and has been used in cancer treatments, because it will activate these proteins that that control cell growth. So those proteins are in your body and they have a lot of potential health benefits, but if you're lacking in vitamin K2, they may not be doing all they could to keep cancer cells under control. You know, we know that we have little cancer cells that come up in our body every day, but our immune system should normally just kill them off. And vitamin K2 helps your body to do that.
Right. But I find that if you're going to an allopathic doctor, I've heard that if you're going to an allopathic doctor, that's probably the last thing that they would tell you is to take any kind of supplement at all. In fact, I know of one that told his patient that she gets all of the vitamins that she needs from the food that she eats and not to take any supplements. And so I just view that doctor as dangerous.
Yes, you know, they don't receive any training. The average medical doctor will receive little or no, or sometimes less than 2 hours of training in nutrition. And really the idea is that really has little bearing on your health or healing illnesses, which is just crazy when you think about it. And yes, although there's no training in nutrition or supplements, it's common for them to say that, you know, this doesn't affect your health or you can get it from what you eat. And that is a nice idea. We would like to be able to get all of our nutrients from what we eat. But the fact is that the quality of our food has changed, what we're eating has changed, and it really is very difficult for the average person to do that. It involves a radical overhaul in what we eat and an understanding of why we need to do that.
Right. And yet the average doctor doesn't seem to notice when all of the patients are dying, no matter what kind of treatment, no matter the treatment that they're receiving. They seem to have a 97% die rate. So I think that if I were an oncologist, I would probably start questioning what I was doing or not doing.
And even for oncology or any kind of condition, we definitely know that, you know, these concerns are not because of a deficiency of prescription drugs. And those may be able to address our symptoms, but ultimately won't be able to address the underlying causes of why an imbalance or a disease developed.
Right. And it would be so much healthier and so much cheaper and so much better for everybody if you just spend the money for the supplements or attempt to find the produce and the meat and things that are more healthy than being sick. And
this is one thing that I've worried about with my book in particular, and vitamin K2 in general. You know, there was quite a bit of research, and every statement I make in my book is evidence based and backed by a study. They're all there, and yet so little it's talked about. So little, even with all of the interest in vitamin D, there's so little focus on vitamin K2, and I kind of wonder, well, maybe the drug companies wouldn't be so happy to hear that there's a vitamin that can reverse your heart disease and improve your bone health and help fight cancer. And so I think that there may be a struggle here or a long road for vitamin K2 to get the recognition it deserves.
Right, because when you look at vitamin E, it's been around for a long time, and it was the big rage, I think, in the mid-80s. Everybody was deciding to add E to their list of vitamins that they take. And honestly, I haven't been listening. But until I knew about your book, I had never heard of vitamin K2. I've heard of vitamin K and that it's good for your blood and it's good for blood clotting and whatnot. But who knew about K2?
Almost nobody. And even if you were listening, Deanna, probably you wouldn't have heard anything about it because despite the research that was done, it just wasn't, I guess it wasn't pulled together, it wasn't talked about, and it just took a long time for it to be recognized. So hopefully it will start getting the kind of awareness that vitamin D does, because certainly anybody who is taking vitamin D needs to understand vitamin K2.
Okay. Now, you talk about kidney disease in your book on page 137, and I do know people who, well, there's a lot of people who suffer from kidney disease. There's a lot of people who are on dialysis, just more than we recognize. I know of one person, it seems to be, I don't know whether it's because they're trying to sell all of these dialysis machines or I don't know, but if vitamin K could help clear up kidney disease, that seems like a much easier program than having a transplant.
Well, yeah, we do know kidney disease is very common. There are lots of different types of kidney disease. The most common reason for it would be a secondary to diabetes, and that's probably one of the big reasons why kidney disease is so common now, because there's so many people with diabetes. And we know K2 helps the diabetes, so that ultimately will help your kidney function. But even more directly, studies have shown that a lack of vitamin K2 and D together, those are poor predictors of kidney function, and in a stepwise fashion. So in other words, the people with, as your vitamin K2 and D levels drop, so does your kidney function, and that's been shown to have a very close relationship. So yes, this is important for the health of your kidneys and their function.
Okay. You also address arthritis. I know that when people get older, they get, and they almost expect it.
This is another one of those things. Yeah, it's just part of getting older, and it's really not. You don't have to suffer. I include specific information in the book on rheumatoid arthritis, which is considered to be an autoimmune type of condition. But for rheumatoid as well as osteoarthritis, which is more of the wear and tear on your joints that tend to wear down over time, vitamin K2 is important. There are other dietary changes like giving up things that may be causing inflammation in your body. Wheat is a very common one, but certainly K2 is helping with maintaining your cartilage and helping prevent any bone destruction that we see with various forms of arthritis.
Right. Now, you are a naturopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. What are your views on vaccines in general?
I think that vaccines were designed to be and were a public health miracle, certainly, and yet the schedule doesn't really make a lot of sense from an immunological point of view, that the current schedule that's being suggested sniffs more of a, or smacks more of a cash grab than something that makes a lot of sense from the point of view of the immune system, as well as, of course, problems with how the vaccines are produced and the additives that are in them. So obviously we want to be able to protect ourselves from preventable diseases, but we've gone too far down the road of focusing too much on the vaccines, and rather than keeping a rational eye on our immune system and how it works and how to best protect ourselves from these things in a balanced way that makes sense.
Right. I don't believe in any vaccines at all, and if I had children, I wouldn't use them at all.
Well, I have to
admit, if I had children that were young.
Yes, right. I have to admit, I did not vaccinate either of my kids yet. One is 7 now, and he's starting to get a certain amount of immunization, but not before that age.
Mm. All righty. We are going to a break, and we'll be right back, and we will take your calls at 800-313-9443. Be right back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Kate Rayom Blue, and she is a naturopathic doctor and the author of Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. We will take your calls at 800-313-9443, and we do have some callers. All righty. Let's take Werner in Canada. Werner, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Dan, and good afternoon to your guest. I just turned in later through the program. You mentioned about autism.
Uh-huh.
And there is a... years ago, I came across on Reader's Digest that some of the autism can be caused by brain injury. There was a in the book section, there was from Joan Collins. Her daughter had... fallen and hit her head on the curb, and she became autistic. But most of the cases of autism, what I understand, they're being now being caused by mostly vaccinations, and this is what Dr. Carly had been pointing out all along. And there's a Dr. Meyer Eisenstein. He looks after about, I think, 14 or 15,000 people in the Chicago area, and he has basically the basic rule, don't vaccinate before you educate. Because especially with the young children or infants, where this lunacy, where already infants are being vaccinated. They don't have any immune system and so, and they're just trying to get used to this world, and then they get right away overwhelmed with this onslaught of dangerous pathogens.
Right. Yeah, we've addressed vaccines quite a lot on this program, and so anyway, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah.
So did you have a question for Dr. Kate?
I got the question. What I'd seen, I think a lot of cancers are being caused by long-term inflammation. And I became aware of it when years ago I heard about, the people that had been exposed to asbestos fibers. And they get up in the lungs, and the lungs can't get rid of them because they are like barbs. They stick in there, and after 15, 20 years of rubbing in there and causing constant inflammation, ultimately it ends up in lung cancer. And
okay. Dr. Kate, what do you think?
Well, that's absolutely true. That will absolutely cause cancer, no doubt about that. And Werner's comment about inflammation is definitely important. And so we need to make sure the body has all the nutrients that it needs to be able to fight inflammation. And, as I said earlier, we have we're exposed to potentially cancer-causing agents every day, but we should be able to fight them off and allow our bodies to deal with those if we have the right nutrients and optimal health.
This is where it comes in about Dr. Joel Wallach, Doctor of Ashes. And basically, after his lifelong research, he came to the conclusion that the body needs... 81 essential nutrients, and when any one of those nutrients is out of whack, it basically weakens the body, and all kind of diseases and ailments that can take a hold in the body.
Right, and he worked with animals, and it's kind of a lot easier.
He didn't just only work with animals. The latter half of his life, he became a medical doctor, human doctor, and he worked with people too. And he worked in the prison system, and he had to do a lot of autopsies, the same way as with animals. And he noticed that it always was a reoccurring findings what he had. When certain nutrients were lacking, that's when health problems started up.
Right.
In animals as well as in human beings.
Right. But animals have a shorter lifespan, so I think it's easier to work with animals, and so that's what he started on. But I don't think he intended to go that direction, but that is what he found when he was doing that. So anyway, thank you so much, Werner, for your phone call.
You're welcome.
All righty, let's take Wes in Idaho. Wes, welcome to the program.
Hello, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. Greetings and blessings to Dr. Kate.
Hi, Wes.
I think your book is answers a prayer. What did I learn from reading the book? Osteoblasts and osteoclasts and osteocalcins, and that carrots really don't have any vitamin A. That was kind of news to me. And that also I'm a keener.
You are a keener. You like the details.
Yeah, I wonder how many people out there listening know what the word keener means. It's a Canadian slang for an enthusiast, kind of a nerd, kind of a geek, correct?
Is that Canadian slang? No, I thought, yes, I guess so. Yeah, somebody who likes the details and wants to know the nitty-gritty.
Well, I saw the word in your book, so I put it into Google, and yes, that under the Urban Dictionary, it said that a keener is a Canadian slang, so I thought it might get a belly laugh. But anyway, the words in your book that said, without vitamin K2, the body would actually try and build bone in the arteries. When I read that, my eyes jumped way open, my mouth dropped open. Wow.
Okay, Wes, can we keep you over the break and then you can ask the question? We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. Our guest is Dr. Kate, and her website is drkatend.com, and go to her blog, just add a slash and the word blog. And we had Wes on the phone. Wes, do you have a question?
Coming up, I wanted to make another comment or two. This book should be on the best sellers list. It's actually a better book than Wheat Belly by William Davis, although that's a very good book. I've read it. I've gotten off of grains, but it mainly talks about what can happen is obesity and lesser absorption of nutrients. But hey, we're talking about heart attacks. We're talking about broken hip bones. This book, if it was out there, would stop a lot of pain and suffering. It would stop the medical mafia from making millions in hideous heart operations and surgeries. It hopefully will change farming, get back to grass-fed. I wanted to point out also that Dr. Mercola and Mark Sisson have written some about vitamin K2 and done a pretty good job of it, but something that is lacking in their writing, and I haven't heard it yet, is that Kate points out that we have a synergistic relationship between vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin K2. The sum of these parts together is greater than the individual part. And now for questions, I'll leave some easy ones here. Pets, what about K2 and pets and GMOs? Soybeans, of course, are the most genetically modified. So in looking for supplements or natto, should I worry about trying to find something that is not GMO and over to Kate.
That's a really good question, Wes, and certainly that's a concern that people have. We know that natto is the food that's the highest in vitamin K2 naturally occurring, and yet it is just about impossible to find soybeans that are non-GMO. Yeah. I have been told that if a soybean is certified organic, that by definition that means it is non-GMO. I don't think those are very easy to come by. I'm pretty sure you cannot get organic or non-GMO pre-made natto. I do have a lot of people who are trying to make their own natto. They're culturing it up. So they may buy some natto and then use that as a starter, stick it with their either their own soybeans or even other types of beans like pinto beans or other types of legumes if you want to avoid soy because of the GMO concern, that you can make your own fermented. It's using the same bacteria, so you will get the vitamin K2. So for concerns around GMO, which is really hard to avoid with soy, then those are some options. And about animals, well, that's a very good question. And we don't know, actually, to what extent animals need or benefit from vitamin K2. I know for individuals who follow raw food diets for their animals and focus on organ meats, that would be a diet that would be high in K2. And Pottinger's work that looked at feeding cats and over multiple generations, raw food versus cooked food, that would sort of pertain to vitamin K2 as one of the nutrients that they would have higher in their diet. So we don't know, actually, about animals that so much yet.
All righty. Thank you so much, Wes. We do need to move on to some other callers. Okay. Thank you. All right, let's take Les in Alberta.
Yeah, hi. Hello to your guest. I'm sorry, I may have came in a little late, so my apologies if you answered this earlier, but the published information about thickening and clotting of the blood is not to be confused with K2, and that's only vitamin K.
That's right. Very good point. Yes, vitamin K1 is the blood clotting vitamin. Vitamin K2 has other roles in the body. It doesn't affect blood clotting.
Oh, very good. And so is there any, again, any negative aspects to excess vitamin K2 supplementation? In other words, if we don't know how much we're getting from our food and we're taking supplements,
right,
is there any negative aspects of excess K2?
Good question. Yeah, no, as a matter of fact, has been shown to have no toxicity. Other fat-soluble vitamins, as you know, have potential toxic effects because they work slightly differently in the body, but again and again in the literature and the research, vitamin K2 has been shown to have no toxicity.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Les. All right, let's go to Chris in North Carolina. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Great show. My question was, and I also missed the first 15 minutes, so if I'm asking something that's already been, the information's been given, I apologize. It sounds like to me that the animals that eat the grasses, it's the chlorophyll, it's the liquid oxygenated sunshine that goes into their system that creates the K2.
Essentially, yes, that's right. So from the chlorophyll, and in chlorophyll we'll find vitamin K1, or in green foods we find vitamin K1, then the body will turn that into vitamin K2. Now, human beings don't do that very well. So as humans, we can't just eat a lot of green leafies and have our body convert it to K2. But animals, so herbivores, they will do that.
Okay, that was my question. So has our gut flora just been so destroyed by antibiotics that we can't make the K2, or is it just it's just because we're omnivores? Then?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. We don't seem to have the ability, whether we had it at some point in our ancestral history, we don't know. But as humans, we do make a tiny bit in from our gut flora, but not enough to prevent a deficiency. Human beings have been having preformed K2 in our diets for so long that we no longer make it ourselves the way a cow or chicken,
right,
or a herbivore would.
Wow, how interesting! And I also wanted to just add that, of course, and all the listeners on this network know, but fluoride does bind calcium also. I know that because I'm a plant nursery person, and I have a bad problem with fluoridated water with customers.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because ultimately fluoride's not so good for your teeth and can cause problems with sotsy, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, fluoride has more problems than just that with the pineal gland and everything else. But I, so for the unwashed masses or those people that we would say aren't awake, they're certainly taking in a lot of fluoride, and probably all the calcium supplements they could ever get in their body are doing nothing. So I just wanted to add that. So thank you so much for the show.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All righty, let's take Wendy in Detroit. Wendy, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm enjoying the program tremendously. And I want to ask the doctor if, say, for instance, in my case, I take vitamin K3. And so I'm wondering, is it necessary to take that if you're taking, to take the K2 if you're already taking K3?
Yes, they work differently, and I would say that, that K2 is arguably more important, much more so than K3. Are you sure it's K3 you're taking? Because that's very hard to come by.
No, it's a vitamin supplement I got from one of the drugstores.
Is that possibly a brand of the supplement? Because K3 is usually hard to come by. Either way, K2 is definitely the one to focus on for bone health and heart health.
Okay. All right, then. Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Wendy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's take Derek in Boston. Derek, welcome to the program.
Hello, Deanna.
Hi.
Hi, Doctor.
Hello.
You mentioned earlier about soybean. Is it true that soy or soybean suppresses testosterone production?
Soy has all sorts of unhealthy effects on testosterone. It affects the thyroid gland, estrogen production. Now, that is typically unfermented soy, so tofu, soy milk, those kinds of things. We don't see the same problems with fermented soy. So miso, and in this case we're talking about natto, those don't have the same problems associated with it as unfermented soy.
So you're saying then like a natural soy or natural soybean will not affect testosterone production?
A natural soybean would absolutely affect testosterone production if you're eating them roasted or boiled. But once they're fermented, the bacteria that breaks down the compounds in soy that are typically harmful for testosterone production or thyroid function, et cetera. So fermented forms of soy are okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek. Right, and also the soybeans raised are mostly GMO.
Well, that's another issue. So even if your soy is fermented, finding non-GMO soybeans is all very, very difficult. And that's why I've had people contact me who are using the natto as a starter and making their own cultures from beans that they know they can get non-GMO, like pinto beans or other types of legumes.
Right, so you can use other beans. That's really good.
Yeah, if you want to make it at home, and you know, if you're already making your own sauerkraut or other types of ferments, you can make your own natto with other sorts of beans.
Sure. My favorite, I think, is black beans. I think they're just really good.
Yeah, me too. We eat those a lot around the house.
Oh, I think they're wonderful. Now, the board op said that she's heard that anything that is seedless is GMO, like seedless grapes and seedless watermelon. What are your thoughts on that?
I can't say for sure if that's a rule of thumb that you can go by, but certainly seedless is not natural, and they've had to do something rather strange to produce a seedless fruit or vegetable.
Indeed, yes. And I believe they also have a different code, and you can get this code online. If it starts with a 4, that means it's not GMO, but if it starts with a 9 or a 6 or something like that, then it is definitely GMO. But certainly this seedless issue, right, because like watermelon, it might be easier, but what did they do to it?
That's right. I mean, there are ways they can do this, possibly just through old-fashioned breeding, but yeah, a natural watermelon usually has some seeds in it.
Right. All righty. So we don't have any more callers. So if you'd like to call in, now's a good time. It's 800-313-9443. And I really second Wes's promotion or endorsement of your book. It is very, very good. And I do have the other book that he mentioned, Wheat Belly. And I am also gluten-free. And I feel better. I feel much better I just feel physically better. And I'm hoping that when I add K2, that I will even feel better than I do.
I'm a big fan of Wheat Belly Book and Dr. Davis, William Davis. He generously contributed a case to my book in Chapter 4, in fact, of one of his patients that had great results with reversing calcification using vitamin K2. And I think that the combination, if you're going to be doing two good things for your health, at least giving up wheat, if not going gluten-free, is worth a try for absolutely everybody, because you can be astonished about the results that you can get and improvement in your health. And combining that with vitamin K2 to make sure your bones and heart are as strong as possible, it's just a great combination.
All right. Now, what story is his in Chapter 4?
In Chapter 4, so that's the chapter on heart health, he did share a case of a patient in his practice that had a calcification of the heart valve. You know, we can get calcifications in the coronary arteries that feed the heart that will cause heart attacks, but you can also get calcifications in heart valves and the aorta and lots of areas in and around the heart, as well as other areas of the body we haven't even spoken about yet. Heel spurs, kidney stones, all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about kidney stones and heel spurs.
Sure, yeah. And Dr. Davis contributed a case using vitamin K2 to reverse calcification on the heart valve, and that's typically a condition that would have required open heart surgery, and they were able to avoid that. But heel spurs, osteophytes, so these are little bits of calcium that can build up around your joints, limit your mobility. All of these things are affected by vitamin K2, and you can help use vitamin K2 to help just dissolve them.
Well, I know a lot of people who have go to the orthopedic surgeons to fix their shoulders or their knees or some other thing, and I don't know whether it's from bone spurs or whether it's the grinding away of the ligaments or whatever. But that is very interesting. And kidney stones and bladder stones. Kidney stones or gallbladder, stones in the gallbladder.
Calcium-based stones, would get all over the body. Vitamin K2 plays a role in preventing them from building up, as well as dealing with them and helping to break them down when they do build up, so that you see calcium-based kidney stones or gall stones. There's all kinds of areas where calcium can build up.
Indeed. And I know that kidney stones can be excruciating. Very,
absolutely.
Very bad.
Yeah, one of the most painful conditions. And so that's one thing that certainly people will notice. That's the challenge with vitamin K2, is a lot of these things you might not notice. You know, your bone density is increasing, or you're clearing out your arteries. You can't see or feel these things. One area where people do report they can notice the effects of vitamin K2 is on their teeth. So a lot of people will say that after they've been taking K2 for a while, the plaque kind of crumbles off their teeth, or their teeth are much cleaner. The dentist will comment, and you've been flossing more. And that is one area where the body will, through the saliva glands, basically secrete K2 right onto your teeth to help clean them up.
I'll be darned. Okay. Wes in Idaho has another question. Wes, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to see a second edition of the book in which she elaborates, explains more. The last chapter, the H chapter, she started talking about the paleo diet, raw vegetable, vegetarian diet. And I would also like to see a glossary that would make the book better, too. And I hope she doesn't give Sterling any more vaccinations. Over and out.
A glossary. That's a good idea, actually. A real good, a handy reference for the terms in the book. Okay, I'll write that one down.
Okay, Wes, thanks so much. All right, let's talk about diet, because we do have a lot of people who claim that the vegetarian diet or the vegan diet is good. And I have been vegetarian, years and years ago. I tried it for a while, but I just didn't buy into it. So why don't we talk about that when we come back from the break? We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today has been Dr. Kate Raume Blue, the author of Vitamin K2 and The Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. And I hope that everyone will buy a copy. You can get it as a Kindle version, which is at Amazon. And you don't have to have a Kindle device. Just purchase a book, download the program, and read it. Or, of course, you can get the soft cover. But anyway, just get it. However you get it, just do that. So we're going to talk about the diet and whether people should abandon eating meat.
It's really not about whether or not you eat meat, but what your meat eats, really. So it's not a matter that eating meat or not eating meat will make you healthy, but the kind of meat that you eat. And so we're looking at grass-fed meat versus the grain-fed meat. That is really critical. And there certainly are some nutrients that you can only get through animal-based foods that may not be popular or politically correct in some circles, but it's just a fact of human biology that we are used to getting those nutrients from those sources. So that's really kind of what it boils down to.
Well, I tried it for a while several years ago, and then I knew a family that were all vegetarian. They were the most unhealthy people that I've ever seen, and I don't know whether it's they were just not incorporating enough protein in other ways. But, I mean, they even looked unhealthy. Their skin was kind of transparent. The father in the family threw a baseball and broke the bone in his upper arm. And I'm thinking, there's something dreadfully wrong with their diet.
Yes. You know, unfortunately, I have to say that I have run into a lot of unhealthy vegans and vegetarians, which is a shame because I know that they're motivated to make these dietary changes for good reasons, and yet it can be harmful in the long run.
Oh, yes. In fact, Lierre Keith wrote a book about it. She had been a vegetarian or a vegan for a long time, and it just all but destroyed her health, and so she wrote a book, and anyway, let's take another quick call. Bob in California.
I have a question. I'm calling in late, and it may have been answered, but I have serious knee problems, and will this K2 help those knee joint problems?
I don't know what the cause of your knee problems are. If it's osteoarthritis, then K2 is an important nutrient to maintain the health of your cartilage and your joints and your bones.
So you think if I take K2, I'll notice an improvement in my joints?
It's definitely one that's worth trying because of its role in cartilage health, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you could that where, at health food stores or
health any food place? Stores, yeah, any health food store should have this. Probably not grocery stores, but definitely health food stores.
And so just take it as instructed, or do you have any advice on what dosage to take?
Usually 200 micrograms per day with your meals.
Okay. Will that be night and morning or all at once? Or?
You can take it all at once, and you don't have to break it up.
200 micrograms a day.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your counsel.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Dr. Kate. This has been very informative, and I hope that you will come back again. I hope the book sells. I've already ordered my vitamin K2. And thank you so very much for this work. Wonderful.
Thanks, Deanna. I've really enjoyed the show.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, listeners. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday.